supposed to preach all of Acts 24. We're not going to do that. My introduction is going to be a quick run-through of Acts 24. But I'm going to read the last five verses of, or six verses of Acts 24. And then we're going to look at Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. So let me read it for you, and then we'll get into the word. But if I could have, everyone rise? This is the Lord's word, and I'd love that you guys rise with me to honor it. Okay? Acts chapter 24, we're just going to read the last six verses, and we're going to jump to Matthew 6. So, Acts chapter 24, 22 to 27. But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, "When Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case." And then he gave orders to the centurion that he should be kept in custody, Paul, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. Now, after some days, Felix came with his wife, Drusilla, what a name, who is Jewish, and he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. And as he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed, and he said, go away for the present. When I get an opportunity, I will summon you. And at the same time, he hoped that money would be given him by Paul. And so he sent for him often and talked to him and conversed with him. And when 2 years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus and desired to do the Jews a favor. Felix left Paul in prison. And now we're going to jump to Matthew chapter 6. Hi, Everett. Is that Everett? Matthew 6. Lost it. Was that the right page? Sorry. Matthew 6. Jesus saying these words in Sermon on the Mount, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body is going to be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And if then the light in you is darkness, oh, how great is the darkness. Now, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one, he'll love the other, or he will be devoted to the one or despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." And so these are the words for today's scripture reading. This is the words of the Lord's word. You may be seated. Thank you. Sorry, I was like a bad. I'm stumbling. I'm a little nervous because the reason I'm a little nervous, honestly, is because a lot of old friends here. And then, you know, when your friends are here, you get really excited. You want to talk to them. But then you also feel really overwhelmed just because they're here. And they're like, you don't get to talk to them that often. And so you want to cherish and you want to do a really good job. So there's like extra little element of wanting to perform at a better clip. But it's not about me. So it shouldn't be about me. So what we're going to do is I'm going to pray and reset the mentality. And then we're going to jump into the Word. Okay? So let's pray. Father God, thank you so much for this chance to come and share the word with my brothers and sisters, with friends, with new friends, with old friends. Thank you so much for the families you brought into our family, into our community. Thank you so much for the story that we get to share today about Felix and about money. And I pray, Father, that you would bless this time, that you would be glorified in this time, that, Lord, as I speak, that I would decrease, you would increase, that your spirit would be moving mightily and it would be inspiring us and guiding us towards you and your word. That as we leave, Lord, that the word would become more real, more rich, more raw to us, more alive in our hearts and in our minds, and it would challenge us to want to know you more. I pray, Father, that we would come with a humility and a heart and a posture of submission to you, to listen to your word, to receive it today. And today, especially because we're talking about something that's not often spoken unless we're requesting things. it is a sensitive subject, so we ask for your grace as we talk, that we would listen and learn and be humbled by what you say and what you've done. And so thank you so much for your text today. Thank you so much for how rich it is and how beautiful your words are and how incredibly challenging it will be and yet so life-giving it shall be. And so thank you so much for this opportunity to share with my brothers and sisters and my friends here. We pray that you would meet us wherever we're at and help us to know you better. In Jesus Christ's name. Amen. So we are going through a series called Witnessing Acts. And it's this. We've been going this for 2 years now. A year and a half? Is it 2 years? I don't even know how long it's been. It's been long. And I'm kind of tired of Acts, to be honest with you. Actually, Brendan even was, we were joking about how, like, man, we've been going through so long. When you go through a certain thing, there's like an attrition aspect, right? You're reading a text and you get really excited at first. But the more it gets to the end, the more dry it gets. And Brendan last week, our speaker last week, he spoke about purpose, the power of purpose. And he talked about how as Paul enters this new time frame, at the end, it's all trials and all persecution. There's not that many powerful, miraculous conversions happening. It's just him getting dragged in front of a group of people, witnessing, getting knocked around, thrown in a ship, you know, sent someplace. It's very monotonous. And there doesn't seem to be very much anything spectacularly happening. And today is no difference. It's a continuation of the trials he's being dragged by him. But every story always has something to offer, a kernel of truth, a kernel of encouragement, a life-giving story or witness. And today, I think one of the things that God was putting on me was I was reading, I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about Felix, should I talk about this or that? We should talk about Felix because it's a really important story. But really, hopefully we can learn something from Felix's heart and his intentions. And so I'm going to do a real quick summary of Acts chapter 24 with you in my vernacular. So it's going to be a little not as fancy or not as faithfully. But I'm going to try to be as accurate as possible. And if you want to, just follow with me through Acts chapter 24 as we go through it, because it's important to know what's going on to Paul so we know the context. Okay? So in Acts 24, we know that Paul was moved from one location to another. They tried to kill him, and so there was an assassination plot in chapter 23. He was moved to another location before a governor or a leader named Felix. And Felix was formerly a slave, and he is now in charge of deciding Paul's fate. And Paul is brought before the court. And the Jewish people that have been accusing him and chasing him and persecuting him have sent a representative named Tertullus. And he was accusing Paul of being like a cancer. So I'm just kind of summarizing. He's like a plague. He's a cancer. He's a troublemaker politically, civilly. He's a heretic. He dishonors God. He dishonors the temple. That he's basically a cancer to the people. And Paul says, nope. That's not what I am. And he goes, and he defends it. And he says, no, that's a matter of interpretation of religious foundations. That's what our issue is. He says, hey, I was minding my own business. I was sitting in the temple. I was chilling. I was worshiping God. And you know what? They came and they attacked me. And he says, I believe in the same thing, but I believe it in a new way. And it's called the way. Right? He calls it the way. And he says, confesses to them, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, there's no admission of guilt. But I was actually here to bring a gift to the church. I was bringing and gathering all the resources from, you hear Galatians and all the stories where Jesus gathers the money to help bless the Jerusalem church. He was there to bless the church. And ironically, they misread him and they put him in jail. So he was trying to help, but they threw him in jail. And so Felix and Drusilla, they pull him aside, and that's what we read today. They want to get to know him better. They want to know more details. And it says here that Drusilla knew about, she was a prophetess, or she was a Jewish person. I think it says that she was a Jewish person. She knew the culture, the history. And then Felix, of course, wanting to know more, they interview Jesus, or Paul. And Paul, what he does, and you read this, it's really interesting. In Acts chapter 24, he says, they're asking him about faith, right? And Paul, the three things he talks about is righteousness, self-control, and the coming judgment. And that's in verse 25. And why is that important? It's because Felix and Drusilla are like soap opera characters. They both, like, they're not the first husband or wife of one another. There's so much, like, drama, and they're, like, they're not very pure people. They're, like, very unhealthy, very bad characters. And so Paul gets pulled up, and he's like, tell us about Jesus. And Paul says, okay, I'll tell you about Jesus. And then he starts to talk about a righteous life that you need to live, that, you know what, you need to have self-control of your life, right? And then he tells them about judgment. So it upsets them to the point. It says Felix was alarmed, and that word alarmed is like phobos, or it sounds like phobia, right? It's like a little bit like phobia. It means they were so disturbed, so convicted and challenged by what Paul said that they, like, go away. Don't talk to us. I need time to process. And so they drive Paul away. And what happens next is what I want to focus on today is in verse 26. It says, at the same time, Felix hoped that money would be given him by Paul. So he sent for him often and conversed with him. And when 2 years elapsed, Felix succeeded Porcius Festus and was succeeded by Porcius Festus and desired to do Jews a favor. He left him in prison. And so what happens here, you see, is that Felix's intentions isn't to know God, doesn't want to hear it really. He's not listening. He's consumed by the want for one thing. He wants extra money. And he thinks that if I, you know, keep Paul here, he might one day bribe me. And that's the hope he has. And so that greed, that want for money, blinds Felix, who's sitting there with the greatest missionary ever to hear the gospel, and he's so blinded by his greed, he can't hear the truth. and accept it and believe it and change his life. Even when Paul preaches the three things he needs to hear, righteousness, self-control, right, and the judgment that's coming. So he doesn't listen. He doesn't hear it. And that thought that his greed would blind him and deafen him to the gospel was something I was praying about. I was like, why would Felix be so blind? And that led me, as I was praying, to something I've been reading in the last season of my life. And if you guys know me, I know, you know, I love Matthew 6, 19 to 21. So I was reading that whole section, Matthew chapter 6, verse 19 to 21. And that text talks about what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount about money. Like, what? How are we to approach the valuation of money and treasure and worth, right? And I want us to look at that today. And this might be, in some sense, a kind of test case preview of journeying through the Sermon on the Mount down the line, which is kind of my next series, I think, we're going to go through. And so today we're going to look at is like what happens when we look at money differently. How does money affect us? And so I have a cheesy title, Greed versus Generosity, but there's three points. Money and our eyes, how money, and how does it affect us, okay? Money and our heart, and what that means is why does it affect us? And lastly, money and Jesus, and how are we to overcome or conquer those effects, okay? So the first is money in our eyes, money is in our heart, money in Jesus, okay? Easy? I give you the points so you guys can follow. Some of you already know that, but this is just good. So anyways, how does money affect us? How does money affect us? Money in our eyes. And I want you to today is we're going to actually mostly sit in Matthew chapter 6 today. So Matthew chapter 6, we're going to be sitting right there in, dude, I got lost already. Matthew chapter 6, 22 to 23. It says these words. And I have never understood these words till this week when I was reading and thinking about it more. It says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body is going to be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body would be full of darkness. Now, if then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And what he's saying is if there's light in this room, okay, and if your eye's the lamp, then it's going to take in the light, right? Eyes, that's how it does. It takes in light to process, and then it fills you because you understand what's going on. And it allows you then to see things, right? Because when light enters your eye, you process the imagery. Now you can navigate. If this room was pitch black and you didn't know the chairs were certain places, could you walk through here without hitting something? Probably not smoothly, right? You'd have to kind of stumble around. And what he's saying is, but if your eye doesn't work and light is not coming in, and whatever's coming in is not able to give you any perception, it's going to affect you, and you won't be able to navigate, won't be able to get through. But why is verse 22, 23 talking about the eyes, right in between, talking about treasures in heaven and talking about money and not serving two masters? Why does Jesus put it right here? And if you read in Luke chapter 11, or you kind of just read in this context, right here, he puts this here because I think Jesus says what you value, what you perceive, how you take that processing of money and valuation of it, that will corrupt or not corrupt you as a person. So he puts it there to say something about money and the accumulation of wealth and how it's tied to this idea of materialism, this idea of wanting more, and how perhaps when you have materialism in your life and this world around us, it can cause us to be blind or be affected negatively. It can trick us. And so here's the thing. Why money and eyes? How does money affect us? And the first thing I want to say is that nobody likes to talk about money. Nobody likes to talk about money. Is that true? You guys think so? Do you agree? I feel like nobody likes to talk about money. I don't hear about people talking about money, right? We all think that we know how to handle money. We don't want people to tell us how to handle money. That's like probably a very private thing for us, especially Asians. I feel like it's a shameful thing to tell people you can't manage money well. And you know what? Everything else in our lives can be visibly bad. Like, you can make a mistake sinfully. You can do something wrong, right? But to say you're materialistic, that's kind of an internalized thing, right? You can kind of show by, like, what kind of things you possess, but it doesn't always show your obsession with wealth or money or acquiring things. My thing is this, and it's funny because as a pastor, this is my experience. We can talk about life. We can talk about mistakes. We can talk about relationships. We can talk about heartbreak. We can talk about struggles. But nobody will ever bring up money or debt or struggles with finances. Right? We don't like to talk about that. And we will acknowledge jealousy, we'll acknowledge our bitterness, we'll acknowledge our lust, our impurity. But nobody ever says, oh, you know what? I'm a really materialistic and greedy person. Very few people will actually say that, right? And I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. And I think one of the reasons is because when we look around, we go, well, I'm not that materialistic because I know someone that's way more greedy and materialistic than me. Because they're way more greedy than me, I can't be materialistic. That's kind of like one of the ways we work around it. So no way I could be. And the thing is, when I mention materialistic, you're like, dude, I know this person. I know what you're talking about. There's this person in my mind right now. You know, I think it's yourself, right? And that's the danger about materialism. We never see it as us. We never talk about us. We talk about other people having that problem, but never ourselves. And honestly, this is something I'll share to open up. I always say pay to play. I suck with money. I love to bless people, but I'm not good at managing money. It's not been a discipline. I never learned it from my parents. And I've only started learning it in the last 4 or 5 years because I've been convicted by the word, but also because my brother, he said, we suck at money. You need to get an accountant. You need to get a manager of money. My wife has taught me to do that. And so I've been challenged by him to turn my life around financially. And I'm sharing this with you because I never got a chance to tell my friends. My friends don't know that about me. They don't know I don't like talking about money because I suck at it or anything. But actually, no, it's one of my weaknesses. And that's why it's so dangerous. That's why it's so such a dark thing in us that we don't even know it's corrupting our thinking. It's seeping in. It's literally a blind spot. And so how is it a blind spot? And I'll give you two examples how it's a blind spot. And this relates to you because we all go through this. First one, for some of you seniors, you're going to see this soon. But if you're not a senior and you're a post-college student, which some of you now are because you're alumni, post-college, you get a job. It's probably not the job you want to do. It's not the job you love. Not what helps or benefits other people. You just need to make money. Why? Got school loans. Got school debt. I just got to get something to pay off the loans to get to a certain standard of life so I can buy what I need and buy what I want. You just want to get to that point where you can be free, right, from your parents and to have choices you want to make. So the first thing is you just want to get a job. And that's one way it blinds us. And the thing about it is you can do that for about 5 to 10 years. I would approximate 5 to 10 years because I've talked to a lot of people. But eventually you're going to start to feel very discouraged, feel very empty. I'm not doing what I want to do. It doesn't seem to be a very good thing. And I'll share a story after this, but many people do this, right? This is why I have a job. I want to pay off my loans. I want to have a certain lifestyle. But you don't ask the questions of what you do for, and why you do it. You don't ask why it actually matters. Is it money? Is my money being used for something greater than myself? Is it being used for kingdom of Jesus' ideals? Or is it for myself? Is it really serving people in need? And I think nobody wants to talk about the hard things. Maybe what I'm doing actually isn't helping people. Maybe what I'm doing actually is taking advantage of people, right? So you're either blinded or filled with darkness, or you don't care. And that's the first thing. Post-college, we tend to make these compromises. And I want to share a story. This is a friend's story, and I don't want to embarrass him, so I'm not going to mention his name. But I have a friend. He used to work for Yahoo Marketing. He moved to Facebook. He's been at YouTube. He was at YouTube recently, and we were having lunch at YouTube. And he's one of my closest friends, and he's such a great guy. He loves God. And he told me, I'm sitting there going, man, you're wearing YouTube, man. You see the buttons? They have these little nap corners that you can just crawl in and sleep and then get out and go do your work. They have coffee bars you can use, snack bars, everything. You have free food. I'm like, I can live here, right? This is all I need. I need all these things, and I can live here and be a janitor. I'll be good, right? We think so. And I was talking to my friend, and he's just like, man, you know, I'm so unhappy. Like, he has a beautiful wife, a kid coming along the way, has everything he wants. And I told him, like, why did you start working at YouTube then? He was like, well, you know, I was at Facebook, and then they came to recruit me. And then I said no, unless. And then he's like, well, I'm just asked for the moon. And he meant, like, I'm going to ask for a lot from them. And he said, you ask for like high demand. And they're like, sure, we'll pay you. And he was like, okay. And so he took the job. And he's in a job that's pretty fulfilling. I mean, he gets the marketing. He gets to spread the, you know, influence in those ways. But he told me he's so unhappy. He wants to quit. He's been so unhappy for a long time. And I hear that, and I know it's because, in many ways, he's taken a job to fill a need, to satisfy a financial need, but it doesn't fully fulfill his heart and his desires to do something better. And I think that's one of the things that blinds us, is that we tend to do things out of necessity, but it doesn't always because we really want to do it, and we don't really think more about it. So first thing, post-college. Second one is our lifestyle and how we live. Among our friends and our communities, our social groups we involve in, we're always comparing ourselves to someone around us. That person has that. Maybe when you're in college, you really don't care because you don't have anything anyway. So like some of you college students are starting to fall asleep because you don't care. But those that are here post-college know what I'm talking about, okay? You know what I'm talking about because when you're in a group of friends and you see your friend with something, and I just did it this weekend with my friend about car stuff, but I'm wrong. So is that we're always comparing left or right. Man, do I have enough? Do my friend have this? Oh, I should get this. That looks nice. Oh, he had it. It looks like it's a good thing for his life. I should have this too, you know? But the question you never really ask is, do I really need this? Will it be actually something beneficial? Or can I be okay with what I have already? this old thing I have, it works fine. I've never had a problem with it. Why do all of a sudden I need to have the different thing, right? Because really what's happening, it's just about you. You're satisfying your need, right? It's nothing about being radically loving or selfless for others. And I think those two things tend to kind of are blind spots. And those are some of the reasons why we're blind to how materialism is creeping and affecting our lives. And that throughout the New Testament, if you read, I think Jesus talks about money a lot. I think Paul talks about money. I think all the saints talk about money a lot. And they say, always watch out how you consider money, consider your use of your gifts, your resources. And you know the thing is, when Christians talk about it, it's uncomfortable. Helicon, are you trying to tell me you want more money? Are you telling me that I'm not supposed to buy this? And it just feels very managerial or like dictating, right? And that's not what Jesus says here, and it's not the point, right? And I want you guys to think about this today is, as much as the New Testament talks about money, we don't talk about money enough and how we use it or how we give it or how we live with it. And the two questions I want to throw out kind of just to think about is, what accountability do you have? What accountability do you have around you as in community or leadership or friends or mentors who tell you or challenge you about the way you give money and serve others with money, right? And the other one is, who is authorized in your life to correct you, to challenge you when you use money wrong? Or you're saying, you know what? I don't need someone to tell me how to do it. I know what's best for me. Do you have someone that says, no, that's stupid. You're foolish. Don't buy that extra pair of shoes or whatever. Now, not call out anybody. Okay, I'm just saying, this is thought, right? No, do you have anybody that you're willing to listen to? Because the fact is, someone's really satisfied right now. And that's not the point. But money has an incredible grip on your reality and my reality and control of our perspective. Its most powerful effect is it affects our thinking. It's in everything we do. Everything we see is advertising. It's consumering. It's like wanting to buy more. Like, I'm a sucker for Apple commercials, usually. Oh, so inspiring. I need to have the new iPhone. You know, its camera must be so amazing with that portrait mode, right? And you know what? It feeds and satisfies and makes us want to be hungry for it. That's its goal, its job. They do a very good job of it. And if you don't see it as a problem and a danger, then you're blind to it. You're being filled with darkness. That's what you're seeing. And I don't want to go into statistics, but we know, especially in the U.S., that very few people hold a lot of wealth, a lot of power, and control of it. And we don't realize we are the upper crust. We are the most upper crust. If you have a college degree or you're finishing your college degree, you are already a privileged person, right? And we don't see that materialism and blindness, because I think most of the world doesn't see this as a problem because they don't have money, okay? They're barely just trying to like survive, get some water, right? For us, we literally don't see it because we have everything. It literally is a blind spot, okay? So that's the longest point I have today. That money affects our eyes. It affects the way we see, and we are filled with darkness we don't even know, okay? It's a blind spot. Second point, our heart. How does it affect you and me? And if you read verses 19 to 21, it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, which moth and rust can destroy, where thieves can break and steal, but store up treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust can destroy, which thieves cannot break and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Where your treasure is, where your heart will be. What do you put your value in? And money often is where our heart really is. That's the fact. Because we're always thinking about money. Because money is something we need to carry in a wallet, we have a credit card, we're thinking about consumption. But why money is such a big deal? Why is money such a thing that affects us so much? And there's two reasons I would pour out and give to you. The first one is the idea is that money gives you and me a sense of significance. Adam Smith has this quote, "With the great part of rich people, the chief employment of riches consists in the parading of riches." Adam Smith says this. Is that we consume, we buy, we wear certain things, includes me, because it ties to us a feeling of our significance. If we can just hang with a social group, if we fit in a certain way, then we know we're acceptable. We fit in. We're equitable to people. And that's a very dangerous thing. Because the moment you start to think of someone as financially or economically less, you don't just see them as, oh, they're poorer than me. How we think is they're not even a person to us. We often denigrate people based on economics and finances. We don't call them just, oh, yeah, you just have a little less pennies than me. No, you're like, no, that guy doesn't even stand. He's disgusting. It's like when you see a homeless person has no money, we don't say, oh, he has no money. We say, no, this guy's gross. He's dirty. He smells bad and all these things. We think they're actually below us completely and holistically as a person. It's a really scary thing. And I'll share this personal story because this is my family story. My family, not like anything special. We're just normal Chinese people, right? My dad became very successful. My mom and my dad have become very wealthy and happy and comfortable. So my little sister, you know, she's growing up now. She's in her 20s. She's dating. And my mom has this thing where she says, my daughter needs to marry a person of our financial level, right? And it's not, my mom's not here, so she's not going to hear this probably. So yes. So she'll say this thing. It's a Chinese quote. 不对门. You ever heard that? What does that mean? What does that mean, Iris? Yeah, the doors don't meet. Your doors are not facing each other. That means you're not equitable to us. So you can't marry our daughter. And I'm going, wait a second, mom. I'm your son, too. I'm like kind of chunky and not special. And, you know, we weren't rich 20 years ago. I mean, you know, I didn't have Transformers, right? And I'm like, mom, we're not better than them, right? And I'm not saying this to my mom today. I'm just saying this is that idea that, you know, you can look so down at someone. Even my mom was doing it. I was like, what? It doesn't even make sense. What? We don't even have a man. It's an apartment, man. There's like different levels. Come on, right? But money is such a significant thing. It defines us. It makes us feel important, and it makes us feel approved. And so one of the things we struggle with is money affects our heart because it makes us feel significant. Okay? That's the first point. Second one is that money makes us feel secure, security. It makes you feel safe and secure. If I just have this money, you know what? I won't suffer. I won't have to worry. Life will be good because I have $1 million in the bank account. But what does that mean? What you're saying is, if I have this money, then this world around me that's uncontrollable, I can probably control it with my money. And it seems like it today with some things, but it's not true, right? The truth is, you cannot add one day to your life, right? You cannot add any security to life. Your life comes and goes like this. It's not in your control. We all know this, right? You guys, some of you guys are here, seniors, you know the Ivy shootings, right? We were all a part of it. And for many of us, the Ivy shootings, nobody had control, right? These people were just murdered. Some kid was in Ivy Market getting something to eat, gets shot, right? No control. $1 million to protect him from that? Maybe if he had bodyguards and like bulletproof vests, but you know, that's pushing it too hard on the illustration. But like I'm saying, and then the Manchester bombing. Kids are going to a concert, right? I mean, I wouldn't go to that concert, but Ariana Grande, it's not my thing, but they're going to this concert. It's just kids, their families are going. And like all of a sudden it just happens, right? People's lives are lost. You are not in control. You are never in control. Money never gives you that security. Only God does. Because money cannot buy you immortality. It may give you comfort. It may give you prolonging of your life. But we all will have to die one day. And I think it's funny because if you think about it, Christians struggle with this the most, right? You know what? Anybody can go on missions field. Not my child. Especially Christian parents. Why not? Why not your kid? My kids, they need to have security. You need to have a few years' salary saved, you need to have a wife, and you need to make sure everything's set, retirement fund set. Who's going to do that? Seriously, at 25, right? They want to go serve God. They want to go on missions. No, no, no. Anybody can do it. My friend's kid can do it, but not my child, right? Because my kid has to be secure and safe, right? And that's the same kind of mentality, okay? Money not only affects the eyes, I want to point out, but it blinds us. It blinds us. It attacks our heart. It affects our view of how we value things, significance and security. And the truth is, it's very empty. And that's what actually Matthew chapter 6 says in verse 19 to 21. It says, when you put it in things of cloth, clothing, fashion, style, moths can destroy it potentially. That means that over time, nature can ruin that thing because it's finite. Okay? Second thing, I'm on the next point, by the way. But rust, what's rust? Rust is the metals, the precious metals you have, the things you have that are made of metal, like cars, toys, whatever. Eventually, those things won't be that cool. Time always makes those things boring, if not uglier, right? You put a car outside for a long enough time, it's going to fall apart. Just rust, right? But even your nice iPhone you have, guarantee in a year and a half, 2 years, you don't want it, right? You're sick of it. And it's gone. It's not special. And then the last thing is thieves. Thieves can break and steal. Obviously, that involves humans, that things can be ruined even just by people. People ruin things, right? And I think in all those ways, he's saying is all these things you're putting value in, the metal things, the clothing things, the people things, the things that you think you can hold close, you can always lose them. Those things are never worth they won't give you true, genuine significance or security. They can always be lost. And therefore, what are you going to put it in? That's what Jesus asks. Because when you put those things that are negative and you want those things, it fills you with the negative things, and it doesn't last. And that takes me to my last point, money and Jesus. How can we overcome this? You see, Jesus here in Matthew 6 doesn't say that you don't have a desire for more. You don't have a desire. What he says is, but you're not putting it in things that are infinitely better. You're only putting it in things that are just going to fall apart and fail you. He says, put it in something that's greater, that will last, that will be forever. And what is that? Obviously, we know what the answer is if you're Christian here, right? Because there is something infinitely better. And when we get to verse 24, he says, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one, or he will love the other. Or he will be devoted to this one, and he will absolutely despise the other. But you cannot serve both. You cannot serve God and money. You can't do both. And the question that it asks today is, what do you ultimately value so much? What is your treasure? What is so incredibly special to you? Because you see, whatever you treasure, okay, and as I heard this instrument, it's so good, but it's the thing that when you look at it, or something that you see, that you are so overwhelmed by its beauty, its attraction, that, hey, you think, if I just have that, I will be all right. If I just have that, if I have that person in my life, everything will be good. If I just have that job, I'll be good. If I have that car, I'll be fine. If I have that new toy, I'll be great. Whatever that is that you treasure above anything, and makes you feel like you'll be okay, that is what you truly treasure. And everyone here, don't lie to me, you treasure something. We all treasure something. You can say, I treasure my family, and that can be unhealthy, right? You can treasure anything, and it will be whatever that is, that's what controls you. And I heard it, and that's such good. This guy had a great illustration. But he basically said, if you look at Lord of the Rings, right, what the ring is called as precious. It makes the people that consume it precious. Why? Because that becomes their treasure. That becomes the apple of their eye. And what happens is when you treasure something so much, it has an incredible power, sway, and influence on you. Because whatever you are influenced by, whatever you treasure, has control of your heart. And whatever that is, you will give anything for it, your soul even. And you'll pay a price for it because it always costs something. Right? Sacrifice of your attention, sacrifice of your resources, your life, your interests, your hope, your relationships with others, everything gets affected. And what Jesus says here is you can only have one master. You can only have one thing that you truly give your devotion to. And whatever that is, if you put it in anything but God, it will fail, it might be stolen, it might rust, it might be eaten by moths, but it's finite, that's the point. It won't last. And everything that you ever want always requires from you something in exchange. It says that you need to give me something to have satisfaction. Right? Your time, your heart, your resources, and dangerously, scarily, your soul. Everything asks for something, especially if it's a treasure to you, except for one thing. And this, of course, is Jesus Christ. Why is it Jesus? Why do I say Jesus? Because Jesus, and I think Kelly said this so beautifully yesterday. I don't know, some of you guys weren't there at the senior banquet, but Kelly basically said, Jesus gave up everything. Jesus had everything. He was in perfect relationship with the communion of Trinity. And yet, in the ultimate aspect of treasuring and security, he had security. He had significance as the Son of the Father. He had everything he needs. And yet he chooses to let it all go, to go after humanity, to go after us. Why? Because on the cross, he loses everything for our sake. He dies for something. And I want you to remember this. You will only die for something that you ultimately treasure, that is so worth your life, that you would be willing to go to hell for it. What is it that you treasure? Right? And Jesus says, I treasure the people that I want to die for, that I love, and I'm willing to give everything up for them. That's why the gospel is so beautiful. That's why Kelly, what she said, was so on point, right? Because we are his precious treasure. Ugh, it's like a tongue twister. We are his precious treasure. Because he has so loved you that you were worth giving up everything for. Enduring the greatest suffering, greatest sin. And so when you understand this as a Christian, my friends, how can you not choose to give up money? He gave up everything for you. Money, it comes and goes. It will not last. And so this brings me to the end. I think there's ways you can kind of apply this. And there's questions you're probably thinking. The first one is, then how do you see people that have more than you or less than you? That's the question you need to ask. When you look at someone that's richer than you or has more than you, what are you filled with? Are you filled with judgment? Filled with jealousy? Because if you are, and you have disgust or disdain or dislike for this person, there's no humility. There's no humility for that person. And remember what the gospel says, that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. You and I are no better than that person. They need God's love just as much as us. And you have to love them. You must love them. Okay? But flip the same thing. When it's a poor person, how do you perceive the poor? Do you go, man, I wish they were more responsible with their studies and their career, and why don't they clean themselves up? You know? Do you know that Jesus became poor so that you and I can experience richness? What do we do? What will we do to give to those who have nothing? Because Jesus gave up everything to become poor for us. So how can we look down at people that God loves so much that he would die for them? And also, this is always the thing I would say. Realize when you're looking down, you ain't looking up, and God's up. So you're not looking the right direction, right? But both of them show what? An unhealthy attention to yourself and seeing yourself better than the other person. There's no love. There's no grace in it. So how you see and apply that love towards others, it matters. You know, there's people here that I've known for years. I can probably say that. Some of you guys have known for over 10 years. And I've seen your lives being so good. And some of you have become so incredibly generous to others. And that's such an encouragement. Because that's radical. That's not standard living. You know, you don't give yourself just because you're like, oh, you know, I want to get more stuff. No, I want to serve others in this world. And you guys are all doing it in different ways. So it's cool. I just see that right now. And the other question that gets asked about money then is, how much am I supposed to give up? Like, Helicon, you're right. I'm supposed to give up something. What does the Bible say about giving up? And that makes me sad. Whenever I hear that question, you failed the test, my friend. Because you don't pass when you think how much. That's not the question. You're asking the wrong question. Because the Bible is very clear, right? It's not very clear. It is kind of clear. Because Jesus' sacrifice is not a relational thing only. It's a holistic thing. It requires the entirety of who you are. And when you ask that question, what you're really asking is, how much do I give so that I'm not wrong? Right? How much must I give before I'm okay as a Christian? And you're not asking the right question because it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't cost you anything. Like, you have to not only be willing to sacrifice as a human being, as a Christian, your life, and spiritually and faithfully, but also economically, your lifestyle may have to be sacrificed. The Bible recommends 10% in the Old Testament. New Testament, I don't really see Jesus saying 10% is a must, right? But the response of people to Christ is often incredibly generous. Zacchaeus, he says, I'll give up. Not only will I give up this amount, I will pay anybody back that I've done messed up with four times or something, right? He goes above and beyond because his understanding is not wrapped around about how much. The measurement of how much you give is the cross. That's what you measure by, is by the sitzijia, right? I don't know why I switched to Chinese, but if Jesus is your heart, then anything is able to be given because he is your treasure. So what is money? Because it all belongs to him. And so the question you have to ask yourself today is, what is your true master? Because Felix, he heard the gospel. He heard what was good. He's sitting in front of the greatest missionary who's converting the whole Praetorian Guard in Philippians, and he chooses to look at money and value it more. He wants the bribe. And he actually ends up getting replaced, right? And so Felix chooses to ignore it, but what will you choose? What master will you choose? And this is how I'll close. No one can serve two masters. You either will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. He doesn't say what you will be devoted to or love. That's what's scary. But you will despise the other one. That's crazy scary. You cannot serve God and money. Now, this sermon, this message, I'm not asking for money. That's not what I'm teaching you here. You guys got that, right? It's the heart. What are you measuring that for? Like, what has Jesus done, right? So we all need to hear this today, especially me. This is written for me. So whatever I'm saying to you, it's probably saying to me too. We all need to grow in this. And so let me pray for us, and then we'll worship the Lord. Father God, thank you so much again for this message. Thank you so much for this reminder, this challenge. But I know I fall short of this very much. I know many here feel guilty and even may feel they have not lived to your call. And Lord, I'm not here to guilt them. I'm here to challenge them, like me, to live and worship you with our resources and all we have, to be radically generous as you have been radically generous and selfless in your sacrifice for us. You gave up everything for us because you treasured us most. So I pray that all of us here would not store up treasures on earth, which moth and rust can destroy, which thieves can break and steal, but we would store up treasures in heaven, which moth and rust cannot destroy, which thieves cannot break and steal, because that's where our heart will be, is where our treasure will be. And if it's in heaven, it will never fail. It will never fall. And Lord, you treasured us so much. How can we not want to treasure you more? And so I pray that we would treasure you above all things. We would give up anything. We would not ask how much is enough, but say, Lord, I want to give you everything. And God has to tell us to stop. And Lord, I just thank you so much that we can have that heart and that desire. And so we honor you today. We thank you. We praise you in Jesus Christ's name.